Hi, I'm Rob Brown, and I'm your host of this Accounting Influencers podcast. Every week, you get interviews and insights from leaders and influencers globally about growth, leadership, talent, succession, tech, performance, and those special things that make the good accountants and accounting firms great. Enjoy today's episode, and let's get started.
Welcome to the show, Martin Brissett. Good day to you, sir.
Hello, Rob. How are you?
Fantastic, Martin. Lovely to have you on the show. You and I have known each other a while now. You are certainly an accounting leader. And on this show, we talk to people about their journey, their stories, and what they've learned along the way. So just for the benefit of people that don't know you, would you just tell us about your role right now? And then we'll go back a little bit into how you got there.
Sure. Well, right now, I'm the owner of something called the Brissett Group, which owns or co-owns several assets that serve the accounting profession in one way or another, and only the accounting profession. So that ranges from self-study coursework through to accounting communities for all different shapes and sizes of firms, and many other things in between. But my operations, if you like, are to serve the accounting profession, to bring financial peace of mind to the business owner in as many ways as I possibly can.
And why the accounting profession?
Because they hold a unique position in the life of the business owner. If you are a business owner, which you and I both are, then we know that there are only certain people that we are financially intimate with. So if we look at the possible categories, do we tell the bank everything that's going on? Of course not. These days, the bank isn't interested, but they used to be. And when they were, you didn't tell them. Do we tell the lawyer? Well, no. Generally, you only use the lawyer when you've got a particular need that has to be addressed. You don't have an ongoing relationship with them. Do you tell the IFA? No, the IFA generally makes less than you do, so you don't necessarily share it with them. Do you tell the spouse or your partner? No, because they may be sympathetic to what you're going through, but they can't be empathetic, having never walked that way themselves. So the only category of people that a business owner talks to that leaves, generally speaking, is the accountant. And as such, the accountant is in a privileged position to understand what's going on in a business, not just financially, but motivationally as well. They understand why it is we're doing this, what happens if we fail, what are the extent of the consequences, but ultimately what the personal and professional aspirations are, just how wonderful it could be if we can get to where we're going. And the accountant has the technical skill set to avoid those pitfalls and make the dreams happen.
Now, you didn't wake up one morning and realize that the accountant is the pivot in all of this. Did it dawn on you gradually, or was there something that caused you to see the light, as it were?
There's two separate events, completely unconnected to each other. The first one was my own father. My father was a businessman who was very successful, and he fell on hard times because he grew beyond his level of financial literacy. There was no support for him, or indeed for managers generally in those days, and that caused him to spiral out of control. When you don't know you've got a problem and you can't fix it, it's a real nasty cocktail. And the impact that that had on my life as a child and my childhood home is unforgettable and stays with me to this day. But I didn't know what the accountant could do at that stage. That came about by complete fluke and chance. I was working in computer software, and I was very unhappy with the ethics in that industry and what people would go through just to make a sale. And I wanted to get out, but I didn't know what I wanted to get out to. And my thought process went like this. I was like, right, what do I want to do? I want to help people. Okay, how do I help people and make money at the same time? Consultancy. What do I know about being a management consultant? Absolutely nothing. Okay, let's start there. And back in the day, and the listeners should have some fun with this, there were things called CD-ROMs. And you used to get business directories on CD-ROM. And so in my office there in that computer software company, I did a search on consulting firms back in my hometown. And I called the first one that came up, and literally the conversation went like this. How can I help you? I said, I'd like to talk to the managing director, please. They said, what's the call regarding? I said, it's regarding employment. They said, oh, is this about the marketing manager's position? I said, it is now. And that was literally the beginning. And I got into a marketing consulting firm that had only just started the process of working with accountants as regulation was starting to relax on what firms could and couldn't say in their marketing comms. They found themselves a new market. And I was in right at the very start of that. So I walked in very, very early on. And it was those experiences, my 13 and a half years there, from being a lackey through to being one of the directors, I learned exactly what accountants did for businesses. And there was nobody else who had that impact.
And going back to that IT role, was that your first job, or did you have a paper round, or were you a professional footballer when you started out getting a wage?
Jeez, I think we'll keep this one short. It started with a desire to be a footballer, right, and clearly not being good enough. I always remember the scouts who said to me, the problem with you, Brissett, is you're somewhere between good and very good.
Right.
And I said, that's a problem? He says, yeah, your age, you need to be somewhere between exceptional and outstanding.
Right.
I was like, right, okay. So being very good wasn't enough. And I think there's a lot of people who can tell that story. Quick dabble with professional photography.
led me to a production administrator's job in a bedding factory, and from there to software. Wow. So a very unfocused path up to that point.
Taking your football career aside, which really never got off the ground, can you think of a moment where you failed that defined you, where you got it wrong, that shaped your destiny?
I'm not sure how much it shaped the destiny, but it certainly shook me out of my confidence. And that was actually being fired. I've only been fired once ever. There's only one job I've ever gone for that I didn't get. So I had this swagger about me. When I was fired, there became this reality. It's like your mortality when you find out that you are actually mortal after all, not immortal. How dare somebody think I'm not good enough for what is an entry-level job?
Yeah.
And it caused me to take a very, very serious look at myself and how blasé I had been towards that role. And the truth is, Rob, I fully deserve to be fired, probably sooner than they did it.
Is there anything you'd do differently, Martin, if you could do it all again?
I like to not think so. I was very privileged to go to a very strong school with a very powerful reputation. And they were always keen for me to stay in academia, which never suited me. I was never suited to academia, even though my results were decent. I was always one of these report cards that said, Martin works well within the confines of his own comfort zone. That sort of thing. He could do so much more if he just applied himself. Again, I'm sure a lot of people relate to that. But it was never for me. And therefore, university was never for me. And I just looked at the employment situation, also the unemployment situation, which when I left school at 16 was horrendous at that point. And I was seeing people going to college and university, studying for 4 years and being unemployed. And I thought, what's the point? Because everything you ever looked at in the job center said minimum 2 years experience. I thought, well, how do you get a minimum 2 years experience when no one will give you a chance? Mm. So I decided to get that year's experience under my belt while all my pals were busy in further education so that when they came out, I was the one interviewing them. And that is actually how it worked out.
Yeah. So like me, you're essentially unemployable. You sail your own ship, you do your own thing. That suits you, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it was never by design. It was just simply not fitting into every other mold.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like I'm the loner, only I can do what I do. It wasn't that kind of knowledge and assurity. It was nothing seems to fit. What's wrong? There's been a terrible mix-up at the factory somewhere. I can't say there's a strategy to this because there really wasn't.
But do you have a finish line? You talk a lot about legacy and making a difference. Where does it all end for you?
I think there's two finish lines for me. The personal finish line for me is when I reach what I think is commonly known as the pinnacle point. And the pinnacle point is when whatever you've put away for a rainy day, however you've invested it, when that starts to earn more interest than what you can make in the day job. Now, of course, it has to be a significant nest egg for that to be possible. So I think that's the finish line for me personally, when the freedom comes, when the discretion comes, I don't have to get out of bed anymore, it's all over.
Yeah.
Professionally, I'm not sure there is a finish point there, because I am, as you say, very keen on legacy. I am very keen on creating content and funds or resources or trusts or whatever that will long outlive me. So I'm not sure if the work is ever finished on that side of things. I guess time will tell.
Is there a piece of advice that has served you well, or an attitude to the world of work that has done well for you over the years?
Oh, I think there's been several. You're not as good as you think you are, Bissett. That was a good one. Really like that one.
Well, it's humbling, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. And it takes guts for someone to say it as well. Mm. And you think, okay, is that extreme jealousy or is that extreme fact? And it was extreme fact.
Well, how are you with direct feedback like that?
Oh, I love it. As the career developed, it was all necessary because I wasn't objective enough to see it for myself. Right. Yet I needed to be pegged down. These days, I look at the track record of the person who's given it to me.
Yeah.
One of the ones that has really set me up for life was actually the accounting firm that I work with. They set me up with ratios. My father set me up with investment ratios of how I should diversify portfolio. My accountant set me up with budgetary ratios, both for the business and home. And the promise of each was if you would just stick to these and never, ever deviate, they will serve you forever. And both promises have turned out to be true. They always say it's not what you make, it's what you keep, or turnover is vanity, profit is sanity, and cash is king. And when have we seen that any more true than the COVID pandemic? The more you live that rule, that simple rule of spend less than you earn and invest the rest, you start to get more and more comfortable as each year passes, and life gets easier as each year passes. You're not constantly scrambling around, and that makes you more assured, more able to be of value to other people, and therefore have a much stronger track record.
Yeah. I know you're a family man, you're deeply committed to that. How easy or difficult do you find it to separate your personal from your work life?
Well, that's a good question. A lot easier these days than it used to be.
Right.
In times gone by, when the job required doing one lap of planet Earth every year, very, very difficult.
And the lines get blurred, don't they?
They do. And you live two lives. You are two people.
Yeah.
And it's weird to be in a situation where you walk off a stage and somebody has traveled literally thousands of miles just to hear you speak, and they want you to sign the book that they bought from you and have their photo also taken with you, only to get home, walk through the door, and the very first words out of anybody's mouth is, dishwasher's leaking, you know, get to work. And it's like, wow, I was a celeb a minute ago, you know. But yeah, you live such a different life on the road than you live at home, and you do need to remain grounded, because people on the road are paid to make you feel comfortable and to make you feel like you're a big deal when you're really not a big deal at all. And if you start believing your own hype, the problems really start then. I've seen that happen to a lot of people.
Yeah. Now, the accounting profession itself hasn't changed much over the years, perhaps in recent months with COVID and everything it may have done. But is there anything you've changed your mind on over the years?
I think from the accounting profession, the technology is the greatest change. Second to that would be regulation, or lack thereof, with audit level thresholds increasing as much as they have over the last 20 years. So those are the two major changes. But the major thing for me that's changed my outlook is to realize that it's about the business owner. The mission has become clearer over the years, and therefore the need for it to be all about me, and I am the great I am, and look at me, I'm author, speaker, mentor, blah, blah, blah. All of those things have diminished over time. At the start, you want to prove yourself and be the great, you know, the great I am on the stage and the guru and so on. And I've definitely grown to have a real distaste for that guru positioning. I don't like it at all. As I've understood more what I'm here to do, I have been keener and keener to fade into the background more.
Now, there's no Colombian proverb, and I can say it in Colombian, actually. I learned it, but it says that nothing in life is worth having that doesn't lie on the other side of a risk. So I wanted to ask you, are there any big risks that you've taken in your life that have either paid off or not?
Significant ones, yes. Personally, yes, there have been. I have generally ignored health advice throughout my life at all times and gone and done whatever I felt like, which no doubt will come to get me at some point in the future. And professionally, yeah, going for roles that don't exist, deciding to phone up organizations that I want to work for or prospects that I want to work with zero reason to do so. Just literally having to put myself out there. It's a very vulnerable position to be. And I think the American version of the Colombian proverb that you just shared there, I think, is everything you want lies outside of your comfort zone or in the fear zone or something like that. And I find it to be true, because those are the growth experiences. And even when you fail at them, you congratulate yourself even having tried it in the first place, when most people don't.
Yeah.
So yes, I have taken significant risks. And again, like the profile of most people, my risks lessen as time go on, because all the risks were made when I was too stupid to know different.
Sure. Now, you're strong-willed, you're strong-minded, you're outspoken. Is there anything you believe deeply that other people think is perhaps crazy?
Oh, I'm sure there's no end of that. But to land on a specific for you, I think the reason why I've ever been titled as controversial, which has happened a number of times, or confrontational, I think, as well, is because there is so much hype and fresh air sold as a solution here in the accounting profession. And, you know, if you're looking to take money off people who've got money, all right, that's business, I suppose. But given that the whole idea of serving an accounting profession is to serve their clients so that people just like you are getting the support they need, and they are not losing the shirt off the back, they are not losing their home, their kids are not going to school with knots in their stomach because mum and dad are arguing over money because neither of them have got it and neither don't understand it. When it's that serious, I don't like the hype merchants, and therefore I'm not afraid to speak out against them. And I think what's been misunderstood over the years is that people have decided that I don't like the person I'm referring to. I have nothing to say about the person because I generally don't know who they are. I'm talking purely about the proposition of the content. And I am very keen, as you know, on people's track records. I look to track records and year in, year out consistency and proof as being the measure of someone's professional adeptitude.
It's a very good word. And I'm reminded of the quote by Muhammad Ali that said, "It ain't bragging if you've done it."
Yeah, that's right. And that companion piece, if you don't toot your own horn, there is no music. There's a lot of people trying to provide silver bullet solutions when anyone with half a brain knows that silver bullet and solution are a contradiction in terms in the accounting profession.
What do you love most about what you do?
Oh, impact, stories. I adore learning about how an accountant has helped a business owner. Not a testimonial, not even a case study, but a story that describes the journey that the business owner went through, describes how the accountant intervened, describes the application of the skill set that changed everything. It can be fairly basic. We can be talking about forecasting here and budgeting and nothing more than that. And those subjects aren't interesting in and of themselves. The impact of them are fascinating. When you see people are able to build their own homes and can afford to do so, when you see someone successfully bring children in as the next generation of their business legacy, I love that. And I don't have any need to have been involved involved in the story at all. It doesn't have to be one of my clients that has done that. It could be any accountant anywhere that's done that. So the more altruism I see in accounting firms, I love that. I love also just the application of their skills. They have such an ability to help the business owner where the business owner will flounder. And when they choose, and that's the operative word, when they choose to proactively help the business owner, there's a mutual improvement that occurs. You might want to call it an upward spiral. We see something happen that doesn't happen in any other facet of business. You don't see an acceleration towards target like that any other way. And I love those stories and I can't get enough of them.
Yeah, it's a great answer. And you are an accountant leader because you lead in this global community of accountants called Upward Spiral Professionals. And accountants are coming to you in big numbers to join this community. What's attracting them? What is it you're offering them that they really need?
They get three things from me. They get a very straight bat from me. There's no promise that isn't filled. There's no hype in there. Everything that I do, whether it's my content or whether it's something I teach or whether it's the people I involve, you know, these are all people who are proven. These are all people who have already been road tested. The content is road tested. It's not a theoretical solution. I didn't read a book and regurgitate it to you. I've been out in the field for two or more decades in front of managing partners, in front of business owners with the managing partners. I have been in those scenarios hundreds of times. And it's that cold face that comes back. And I don't see that available in many places. So I think they get community. I think they see a bigger purpose to what I'm doing, that they go, yeah, we buy into that. And I think the content they get, A, works, and B, works more than once because it's proven and not a fluke. So it's the assurance. It is exactly what it says on the tin. And I think that's the thing. And you find that if we lose anybody from those communities, it's because they didn't bother implementing anything they were given.
So what, in your view, separates a good accountant from a great one?
Wow. Well, I think any good accountant has got to be technically proficient, you know, so an accountant that really does have your back, does tidy up the compliance affairs, and you don't suddenly get a knock that you weren't expecting or a fine that you weren't expecting. A great accountant for me is the one who takes the lead and decides to have the heart of a teacher and thinks to themselves, I know how this business can move forward, and doesn't need a prompt to pick up the phone to say, hire business owner, we need 45 minutes together, I've got an angle. And the ones who can actually reach out and don't constantly chase deadlines for a living, but are thinking about the businesses, thinking as an advisor or a consultant would think, how do I help them? They keep getting stuck on this bit. They keep having an overdrawn director's loan account. Let's get them out of that situation. They're struggling. I can see them. They're tired. Last time I saw them, they were tired. I'll think about this. And it's the ones who are always thinking about their clients and then coming up with a reason to talk, to say, I've got an idea, see what you think. That's maybe less than 10% of the entire profession. But I've been blessed to know a lot of that 10%. And that's not just a great accountant, that's a great human being.
Yeah. And you work a lot with accounting firm owners, leaders, managing partners, but thinking of those lower down the hierarchy, what in your view makes an accountant promotable?
Well, again, I get the pleasure of working with rising stars as well. Senior managers who are perhaps earmarked for great things, or partner designates, or first year, second year junior partners who are not quite equity yet. I get to work with all these guys around the world, and there is a consistent set of seven characteristics or qualities or skills that the partners of the firm are looking for in these people, so that they need to demonstrate those skills or develop those skills, or indeed the partners don't even know they're looking for but are impressed by when they see them. So there's a very defined set of seven skills in young professionals that make them eminently leader material or indeed partner material.
Yeah, and listeners would love to go through the seven, but we haven't got time, and they can find that kind of thing on your Rising Stars Roundtable, can't they?
They can indeed, yeah. Rising Stars Roundtable, which they teach those seven, yes. So I think only two or three of them will come as a surprise. I think the majority are common sense.
Yeah. Is there any bad doctrine or bad advice being put out in the accounting world that really gets you?
Endless. No, we have to have a podcast series on all of that. One of the things I remember, and I won't say who was responsible for this, but it really did great a lot for a long time. In the economic crash of 08, there was this ongoing teaching to lowball fees just to win work, you know, and I get it. I get why. Okay, because there's a scarcity mentality. Everybody's panicking. So just lowball to win work. And there's a real one particular purveyor of this message, just lowball to win work. And the people who follow that teaching are all the ones now who go on pricing courses. How do I get my prices up? How do I get them to pay more? All these clients are doing my head in. You know, 80% of my headaches come from 20% of my client base, the grade Ds. Yeah, that's right. It's because you were stupid enough to listen to them back in 2008. There have been so many pieces of content that annoy me because they are factually incorrect. They are not demonstrable in any way at all. And that's the one that came to mind when you said it straight away. There was this whole lowball craze for a while. with one particularly loud voice, but some others as well. And the people who followed that now have a portfolio full of grade D clients that they can't sack or sell.
This is great stuff, Martin. If accountants and leaders listening want to have a chat to you and talk more about the stuff that you're doing and that you talk about, what's a good way for them to reach you?
Three great ways to connect. The easiest one is on LinkedIn. The second is at bissettgroup.com, B-I-S-S-E-T-T. And the third is on martinbissett.com, where you'll see a place to get in touch there on both of those sites. So just reach out in any of those three ways and be delighted to have a conversation, regardless of what the conversation is about.
Fantastic. And a couple of questions to finish. I know how much of a learner you are, but we know it's lonely at the top. So where do you go to for advice, support, wisdom to be able to speak and act the way you do?
Probably two places. I've always believed in having a mentor, and these days I have a mentor council. So I look to the ones who did it, and I ask the ones who did it, who are now out of the game.
Like a personal advisory board, perhaps.
Yeah, that's a fantastic way of calling it. Yeah, a personal advisory board. That's a great term for it. Yes. And there's no paid relationship here. It's people who were very successful in what they did, whose principles are timeless, that the trends don't change. And it's 2021. Well, it doesn't matter whether it's 2021. It makes absolutely no difference what year it is. So I go to them sometimes to blow a fuse and sometimes to ask a question, but they always reset me. And the other place is books. Again, as is widely known about me, I don't like the latest business book about this, that, or the other, especially if it's called The Power of Something. One page of information and 333 pages of filler. I do like the classics, and I have found classics, again, where their wisdom doesn't go out of date. And so I read pretty much the same 12 books every year. And when you read a book every single year, you stop reading it and you start studying it.
Yeah, that's brilliant. What do you think you'll be remembered for when all this is done and dusted?
I don't know. I have no idea what I will be remembered for, but I know what I'd like to be remembered for. And I'd like to be remembered as the guy who accelerated the transition of an accountant from a recorder of historical performance through to a lifesaver or even a life accelerator. And for the ones who empowered, enabled, encouraged, inspired, whatever you want to use as the prefix, that awoke the professional to getting the full potential out of their skill set, what they learned how to do, how to apply that to the best possible result for themselves and for their clients. Yeah. I'd love to have been the without whom. You know, when you win the Get Awards and they always say, I'd like to thank so-and-so, without whom none of this would have been possible.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to be somebody's without whom somewhere. For those who remain in practice and for those coming up, I'd like to be somebody whom someone would like to be.
Yeah, well, it is inspiring, and you do touch the lives of people you come across. So final question today, if you could give one piece of advice to leaders, upcoming leaders, maybe even the new recruits coming into the profession who want to likewise be that person without whom none of this would have been possible, what would you say to them?
Put sell the ego on eBay. There's a lot of this, I'm doing it for myself. I am the great one. I am the CEO. I am the this, I am the that. I think that goes away over time, at least I hope it does. And I hope desire for doing nothing other than making money for yourself goes away as well. And I would love there to be an absolute swathe of leaders, because they are leader quality, who believe themselves to be servants, who believe themselves to serve the profession and be remunerated fairly for having served the profession, but the serving came first. I would love that to be the case. I'd love that to be the attitude. I would love them to have a heart of a teacher and for the realization to come that the first shall be last and the last shall be first.
That's almost biblical. Martin Bissett, that's been brilliant. Thank you so much for your time and your inspiration today.
Thanks, Rob. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. For show notes on today's and other episodes, plus some great blogs and resources to help accountants lead, sell, and perform at the highest levels, go to bdacademy.pro. Until next time, have a fantastic day.